Ba-da-ba.
You guys are such ass.
Welcome to The Second Wall, a binge-free zone where we look at a series and discuss it in small movements. This time we are discussing the 2017 series Your Lie in April. It can be found on most podcasts and social media platforms, a full list of which can be found at beardyandthebeast.com. Please watch episodes 1 through 3 and join Drew and I in the lobby to discuss the show afterwards. So what's your first impressions, Drew?
I like it.
I'm glad.
I imagine the emotional roller coaster is going to come later, but I definitely enjoyed all the comedy bits.
Mm.
And then all of a sudden, like, little dashes of, like, darkness kind of seeded throughout the three episodes.
Yeah.
But overall, it was pleasant. I enjoyed my watching experience of the all three episodes I have seen so far.
Yeah. It's I've watched this one a few times now. I was going to do a rewatch and then, you know, we needed to do the second wall again. So it lined up well for me. It's interesting picking up on threads, you know, knowing the show. But of course, you're not going to know that. So we'll explore, much like we did with Carolyn Tuesday, if you're going to pick up any of some of the threads.
I mean, I just assume everyone's going to lie to everyone at some point. Everybody's going to have a lie or a multiple lies.
I guess start with the first episode, kind of go from there. So to me, the first episode is very much just introduction. Anything?
Well, the first thing in the first episode that immediately hit me was how lovely the backgrounds were.
Mm.
Like, it wasn't the same as, like, say, a Ghibli or a Chizu situation. It was definitely its own thing. But
yeah,
I definitely enjoyed the attention to color and detail, which obviously seems to be a theme that's running throughout at least the first three episodes of this.
Yeah. I know there was a couple of things I saw with the coloring. It did almost feel like it brightened up a little bit as they were talking about like the idea of looking at the world in monotone versus color.
Mm-hmm.
when you get that connection. And I do feel like it was subtle. There's just something, I don't know, to me I noticed the colors just looked like they popped a bit more when he kind of when he had that experience.
Mm-hmm.
Which I really liked. And I know they definitely play with the colors, the color palettes in the episodes kind of later on as well. Even just with the three that we've seen.
I definitely hope that's like a recurring thing that is experimented with.
Hmm.
Like, I don't want it to become too static, but I imagine going partial prediction mode for the rest of the series, I imagine that we'll rise. What is it? Kusei?
Yeah, Kusei. Yeah.
He'll become not engulfed, but like saturated in more and more colors and begin to experience and see that until it hits like a crisis point.
Right.
And whether or not it's going to be him or somebody else, they're going to slip into that monotone.
Okay.
And I think that's going to be, if they do something of that nature, I hope I hope that's how they express it, I guess. It's more of a hope than a prediction, I guess.
Yeah.
Just like based on the themes that they're using with the color so far.
And to be honest, I can't remember noticing the color palette like that on the previous watch throughs, but it's also been probably a year or two since I've seen this show. So because of that, like the, so we talk about the colors. I know that was kind of brought up with a couple of the characters as well. So again, like we had Kosei talking about his darkness, and now he's kind of stuck in that.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got Tsubaki, which is definitely a lot more colorful and energetic. And there's just like a very clear difference in that.
Mm-hmm.
I think there was a scene where it was showing his piano room, where it's just very dark, very dusty. You can tell that he hasn't been in that room in a while. I thought it was a really powerful scene. So, so what's your take, I guess, on? I guess we'll start with Kosei's character here.
Poor boy was abused as a kid.
There's definitely a bit of that.
Essentially, straight up, his mother, who was accomplished, fell ill, could no longer perform herself, and then was trying to live vicariously through her son and pushing him to the extent so that, like, whatever the opposite of Munchausen syndrome is. Like, you need your kids
to... Dance mom.
you need the kid to succeed because you were unable to do so yourself.
Mm.
And it was interesting in the... I don't know if it was in the first episode. It was in one of the episodes when he was having kind of like the flashback. It wasn't a flashback. It was more like filling in context. Like, it was showing us a visual description of a feeling that he was having rather than flashing back to an event.
Mm-hmm.
Is how I took it. But the... The only color in those scene I took as being wounds on his face, where he had been struck. So I could be wrong about that. It was just weird to me. Felt really bad for him.
Yeah.
Do you have anything to say about that before I like continue talking about the character?
Go ahead.
Okay.
I definitely see what you mean. The flashbacks, I agree with that. The flashbacks don't feel like flashbacks.
Mm.
They feel like memories and emotions around them.
Well, the one that did was the recital from Tsubaki's point of view felt like a flashback.
Mm.
Not an emotion.
I agree with that.
It's just
So we have that as the opening scene, and I know we cut back to it again.
Mm-hmm.
I almost wonder if there's that bit of tonal shift around it, because although it's a memory for her, it's not how she's expressing those memories. I think she was able to express her feelings about it more directly.
Okay.
Later on. I think it was in episode 3 when she's talking to Kaori, sorry, about trying to get him as the pianist for her.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think there's definitely still that context there.
I mean, this logic tracks.
Yeah.
Especially because Kusei, like, is not able to express himself well or maturely.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a shame, like, Tsubaki is able to, so far, she seems to be able to understand where he is, maybe not the, like, individual components of it or anything like that, but she can understand and see through all the cloaks and all the hiding, like, he's hesitating and he doesn't want to do a thing because it's something within himself.
Right.
And I, especially with how long they've known, I just think it's such a shame that Kusei is not mature enough to talk to her about it.
So I think there's an interesting point in the writing with this so far.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just these episodes. So I agree with what you're saying. I don't necessarily know if that's a fault with Kusei. I think it's they wrote Tsubaki and Watari as well a little bit more mature than a 14-year-old.
That's
like,
true.
Both of them just kind of have this, like, almost have this wisdom in the way that they're talking to him. And again, like, this trauma happened to him, it was, I think they said, what, 3 years ago. So he was like 10 or 11. This happened.
Yeah.
Right. So it's, I mean, of all the times it's going to, you know, affect someone, that's definitely a time that might take a little bit to get over. And I don't think he recognizes it himself. But one thing I noticed watching in here was with Tsubaki in particular. As you said, she knows him.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think she's trying to find the right way to push.
Mm-hmm.
And it's finally found it with Kari. Because I mean, there was a scene, it's like, oh, he's still not playing. Where mm-hmm. she was like sad that, like, you just get the impression that she heard music coming from his place all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And then you don't. So I think it's about trying to find a way to spark the passion in him again.
Mm-hmm.
Because she knows it's there, regardless of how much he's burying it. Because, well, clearly there's some psychological trauma there.
Mm-hmm. No, I definitely agree. I'm interested to see how his character develops and how his relationship with Tsubaki and Kari grow. And how they kind of like flush out and what that's going to mean for him.
Mm.
I'm hoping that it's going to be less internalized, like less everyone helping just this one dude.
Yeah.
And more everyone helping each other in some way.
Mm.
And hurting each other in some way. Given the title, I assume there'll be some of that.
That.
You're like, I can neither confirm nor deny.
It is honestly the hardest part about doing this, and I had the same issue with Carolyn Tuesday, where it's like, I don't really want to necessarily explore options either way because I don't want to color your your perspective on it.
I mean, I like theory crafting anyways.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
Kind of brings me the next character that I've written down is Watari, who seems to be a loyal friend, but not a loyal boyfriend. I don't actually have much for his character so far. I'm sure they'll go into him and flush him out at least a little bit, but so far the like clear aspects, not really my style.
Hmm. I agree with that. I think the big thing, the biggest thing with his character, we've already kind of touched on. His way of describing like the color that can be brought into the world. And even again, the maturity, I think the biggest thing for me was the maturity when, I think this is episode, this would have been the second episode, where he realizes that Kosei obviously had a connection with Kaori.
Mm-hmm.
And even though Kaori's interested in him, like just the response of, not about how she feels right now, it's about how you feel. This matters. It's cool. Like, it was just insanely, I don't know, felt very profound. Felt very much like something that wouldn't come out of a 14-year-old's mouth.
Are you saying he's a sage? Are you calling... Yes. Are you saying that Watari is Gandalf and Kosei is a hobbit?
Obviously.
No, I definitely agree.
Yeah.
And that's... Aside from being a bike taxi in these three episodes, that's the only real point, I guess. Not point, but contribution.
Hmm.
These, like, sage-like tendencies, right?
Yeah. Yeah, he definitely doesn't have the same connection that Sabaki does.
Mm-hmm.
But as I said, there's something there. Like, it's just that loyalty and just that. Let's just talk.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about it. And I'm going to get you to where you need to be. Because let's face it, that's helpful too.
Yeah, that's true. Now, Tsubaki. Oh, Tsubaki. I'm not sure what to think about her so far. Like, I love her character. But she said the anime romance, like, leading words. Oh, he's like a brother to me.
Mm.
So this leads me down the, oh, so Kusei is actually going to, like, start chasing Kaori or get with Kaori, and then Tsubaki is going to be all of a sudden realize that she loves Kusei, and then it's going to become a thing. Like, just because of the tropes related to, like, romance animes, I guess you could say. I'm not making a prediction there, but there was definitely, like, a bit of a like a tainting. I really do appreciate how much she cares for Kusei. I'd like to see that reciprocated in future episodes.
Mm.
Otherwise, I just don't want to see it all just being about, like, one piano prodigy, essentially.
Mm. That's fair.
Yeah. Equal parts for at least three of the four main characters that they've shown so far. And I imagine halfway through the series, they might introduce another character just to spice things up.
And then we'll get an Angela cut.
Release it.
So there's definitely that anime trope. Again, the like a brother to me line that you said.
Yeah.
It's interesting, though, because they both use that same language, which actually isn't normally the case.
True.
So, like, you can tell that they definitely grew up together and they both see each other in the same roles.
Okay.
Right. So you know, in some cases, like, oh yeah, no, it's like I got to carry around my kid sister, and then the kid sister's like, oh, I'm carrying, and the sister's going, oh, I got to carry around my kid brother. But they were both clearly, it's like, he's the kid, she's the older sister.
Well, there was the one line when they were walking with Watari, when he was like, how, you know, like, how do you put up with her? It's like, oh, she takes a lot of caring for her.
Yeah.
Like in a like big brotherly way, so
yeah.
It's a fun dynamic. I honestly hope no romance blossoms there.
Mm.
I'd like to see more of the familial relationship. It would I think it'd be more pleasant for the story, to be honest.
Mm. Yeah,
no. Was Kaori, I know she was in the opening scene, opening scene. Yeah. Was she in the first episode? Or was that second?
She was in the end of the first episode.
That's when they met?
Yeah.
Okay, so my first reaction to her is she is someone who is magnetic and attractive. Not just like, not like a physical kind of thing. Not even like a romantic sort of thing. The way that they draw her, her expressions, the way she acts around people, and like the cuts that they specifically use really make it feel like she's somebody who can draw people to her.
Charismatic.
Yeah, very charismatic. I love how I used 50 words to describe a single word, which you know off the top of your head. Hashtag super smart.
That's how we do.
Yeah, I'm super intrigued with her character. And one of the things that I hope is through her collaborating with Kosei, I hope that he becomes less by the book and can find his true sound, I guess you could say.
Right.
Whereas she can find some grounding. Because she definitely has a wildness about her, right?
Right.
Like, obviously, she's highly technical, highly skilled, and puts in a lot of practice. There's something about her that's airy, floaty, and wild.
Mm.
And it's a personality thing. And it's kind of interesting that you have three peoples of this kind of nature floating around Kusei, who's really just like my descriptive term. I wrote descriptive terms so I could remember who each one was while I was watching it, so yeah. I could memorize the names. I just wrote Kusei nerd.
Well, it's just, that's an interesting thing. It's like when you talk about that. So, because in my experience in high school, Usei would never be friends with Tsubaki and Watari. Like, it's like, here's the theater kid, here's the jocks. Mm. So it is definitely interesting to see that. Kaori, when you find out, you know, in the third episode, makes a lot more sense.
Mm-hmm.
For her being drawn to him. It is something that does, like, now that I'm thinking about it, does make me think with Watari is what is your connection? And maybe that's why it didn't feel like he had quite the same pull.
Well, I think you were able to describe it quite eloquently earlier.
Yeah.
Like that sage aspect and aspects when it comes to, you know, love and being attracted to somebody else and like create a defining point of what a feeling could be for someone who obviously has not experienced it before.
Mm.
Whereas like the other two natures and how they are different but complementary to Kusei are a whole lot more clear.
Yeah.
I think you just inadvertently described it quite well for Watari earlier.
Yeah. Yeah, I think this means, like, I'm not meaning as the character in the show. It just means, like, in the real world, you wouldn't necessarily see the connection.
Oh. Well, I mean, I hang out with you.
I know you nerd.
Stop stealing my girls.
Another shot in particular that I really liked in the first episode,
mm-hmm.
Again, as we're doing those, as you call them, the memories,
mm-hmm.
I really liked the shot of the wheelchair in the shadow. I don't know. I just thought that nailed the feeling that they were going for. It was very, I just thought it was a great shot and worth noting. I can tell by you rolling your eyes, didn't note it.
I didn't notice at all.
Well, I did.
And it wasn't an eye roll. It was a back and forth with a... How do I affirm this statement without giving it away that I have no idea what you're talking about?
There was just a shot when he was talking about his mother dying, and it just had like the wheelchair sitting there.
Okay.
And just like her shadow was cast on the ground with obviously not shadow. I thought it worked.
And thematically for his character works great too.
Mm-hmm. So let us move into, I guess, anything else with what we've covered, or should we kind of go over what we saw in the second episode? Or
Episode one was a pretty decent introductory episode.
Mm-hmm.
I think you got a feeling for all the characters and their basic relationships towards each other. There wasn't too much that was left wanting there. So, like, structurally, I think it was done quite well. From the technical aspect. And then I kind of mentioned this before. The background environments, especially, like the cherry blossoms, were so beautifully done. One of the first things I noticed, and one of the things that I love that they did, it threw me off it almost immediately. Any side profile of Kusei.
Mm.
They erase part of the arms of his glasses so you can see his eyes.
Yeah.
I really like that they do that because that allows to bring out that more expressiveness.
Mm-hmm.
And you get over it pretty quickly, even though it's like, why do you see the arm in one shot and not the other?
Yeah, it's definitely weird, but I'm glad they didn't do just like the floating glasses that you see in so many characters.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it just to describe, so it's like they just like cut out like an inch of the glasses frame.
Mm-hmm.
You can still see the rest of the bar. It's actually really like that as a stylistic choice as well. Because otherwise, they're showing so much through the eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And they found a good way to not stop that.
Well, and especially comparatively, for the most part, Kosei has a static eye kind of shape and look. Whereas the way that Tsubaki and Kaori's shifts and changes and sparkles or has flex, like, just so lovely and well done and very expressive. So having the having conflicting emotions being expressed by the eyes so well, I really appreciate it.
Yeah. And they say it's the window to the soul, and I think they definitely show the characters very well with those expressions. Again, to the point, it's like you could see his eyes shift in the way they were done when he saw Kaori. Like, and it's very efficient in its animation, which, if you've listened to us at all, you know, is something that we both really like seeing.
Yeah, no shot wasted.
Yeah.
That being said, you don't have to express something with every shot, but not having it filled with fluff. Like, sometimes having a lingering background or a lingering vista can be important, especially if you're setting a tone.
Yeah.
You don't have to have, you know,
action in every scene.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So episode 2 was the tricking Kusei into going to watch the recital, right?
Yes.
I guess they kind of tricked him at the end of episode 1.
Yeah, so they tricked him at the end of episode 1, and we see the full ruse revealed in episode 2. And I like how he calls her on it.
Oh, for sure. Oh, darn it. I wish they had gone to see a musical, because then I would have made a Moulin Rouge joke.
Well, I mean, you kind of did still.
Yeah, it just doesn't work as well.
That's fine.
One of the things that I really liked about this episode, as soon as they walked into the lobby, I guess, just hearing like Kusei being subject to the whispers and the noise of the people around him, bringing him back to a place where he didn't necessarily want to be, and how it was impacting him, was very well done.
Yes. And I like how they played with the whispers on it too. It's something that definitely comes up more specifically in episode 3. I guess more confirmed in episode 3. Because there's... Is that nervousness, or is that people talking about
him? Mm.
I think they played it pretty ambiguously in that first one, though. I think it, at least that first scene... But it's an effective way to show the emotions he's going through, and the fact that he was known, also helps show, you know, why is Tsubaki saying, "Why isn't he playing? Why am I not hearing the music anymore?" All just in that one entrance. And no scene wasted, indeed.
Well, that was such an interesting concept, because they introduce you kind of... Well, they don't introduce you to this concept. I think I read it in, like, accidentally read it in the line when I was pulling this up on streaming services to watch, right? And it said, like, childhood prodigy.
Yeah.
And I'm like, so I went into this knowing that fact, which is unfortunate. But one thing that I really liked that they did is, like, Kusei, Watari, and Tsubaki just being so confused.
Mm.
And, like, even Curry explaining, it's like, no, you're a celebrity to us.
Yeah. I definitely got the confusion from Tsubaki and Watari, because this isn't their world. I don't think Kusei was confused by it. I think it was anxiety that might have presented that way.
Okay, yeah, makes sense.
Because you see it in a few of his movements and just in a few of the animation choices they did. So, like, he had that tremor in his hand. And then, like, just, like, when opening the door into the auditorium itself, like, the poof of dust that comes up. I don't think the auditorium was dusty. I think that, I feel like that was more figurative. He's dusting something off. He hasn't been in this, so just because, you know, auditoriums normally aren't going to be that dusty.
Yeah, especially like dry dusty air or something like that was the comment.
Yeah.
I like your take on that. I took it at face value, but I like your take better.
Yeah. Well, because it's one thing, there's a lot of poetry in the language used throughout. So I think that there is some of that in the art style as well, like much like we're talking with the monotone colors. Monotone versus colorful, and just those slight changes. And you see it in the opening credits of the show as well. It's very impressionistic.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's something to kind of keep in mind. I don't think for the most part they're going figurative with stuff like that. That one there in particular jumped out at me. So, what did you think of Tsubaki's plan?
What did I think of it? I think it's complicated. For me, it's a catch-22. So, if it was me, if I was a super piano nerd who can't play anymore because I got problems, and my childhood bestie, she was like tricking me to go to this thing, if I'm like how I am right now, I still would have said no and just walked away. But that's a double-edged sword, you see, because Tsubaki in the show would know that, and she wouldn't have tempted that because she knows I would just walk away, right?
Yeah.
So, the plan itself, given the fact that I've already mentally resigned myself that Tsubaki knows Kusei more or less inside and out, which was a note I wrote down for episode one, I think it was a good plan.
Yeah.
And her intentions are good. Especially with the revelations from episode 3, which we'll talk about.
Mm-hmm. I think this will get explored a little bit more in the themes of episode 3. I think one reason why this plan, I think, would work, and I could think of, like, I'm sure there's a situation where I could probably do something like that with you. Because a big part of it is she knows.
This is how you caught me the first time, freaking free puppies on the side of your white panel van.
Right? Look, everyone likes free puppies. All I could afford was a white van. Nothing creepy about this. Nope, stop before I have to edit out a bunch of stuff.
On the internet?
On the
internet. Forever.
So, this isn't... And Tsubaki nails this. He hasn't given up on music.
True.
It's very clearly a mental block with him. So... this is shown in the first episode and in this episode. It's very clearly shown in this episode. Because he's always still in the music room. When he's having a panic attack, that is where he goes in the school. Right? He's sitting there, he's transposing. He still has the passion for music, but he's got a mental block. Which I think is the reason why this plan works.
Mm-hmm.
I agree. A very not so emotional example that I can think of in the real world is like, we went to a concert and you're like, I'm fine. I'm not going to go to the front. And then we swayed the entire crowd in a mosh pit so we could go up to the front because I knew that's what you actually wanted to do. clearly not the same emotional weight to that. But I think that's what she's doing. She finally found that reason to get him there for something that she always knew. I mean, they're sitting there, they're sharing music. And you can tell the big things like, yeah, cool, you can transpose it. It's like, just do it again. I like how this was definitely not... Watari's world.
Just like doesn't understand it at all.
In any way, shape, or form.
Didn't even get to the third time playing the same song.
Didn't even get through the first. One thing with just to finish off with Tsubaki, now that I realize I'm looking up from notes again. I really liked, again, we talked about the light in the eyes, how her eyes lit up when she realized that he was miming the piano. Right? It's like, yeah, she knows what she did. And to follow up on the light, I liked seeing Usei's eyes start to light up. As he's back in that world.
Well, especially when he ended up getting exposed to Kari's rendition of the piece.
Mm-hmm.
Such a wild, non-traditional take on it. And I think that's one of the reasons why it was able to spark something in him. Mm-hmm. Because it was based outside of the traditional structure, which was hammered into him.
Yeah.
So it's kind of attacking that blockage from the side opposed to like straight through.
Yeah. And it's interesting because like just the set pieces in general, like it did spark it, just not in that same way.
Mm.
Which I thought was mirrored interestingly with the judges. Like you had that very, this is how it's done. And the other one's like, man, this was so much better, but it's not how it's done.
Yeah.
Well, that goes right. Proud, pleasing moves.
Well, that goes directly back to when Tsubaki, was talking to Kusei and was like, do you think she'll do well? And he's like, not at all. There's so many infractions. There's nothing what they're looking for in this piece. But it was really good.
Yeah. And I noted this. I'm not sure how much you know. Like, this is actually a very real debate that happens. Mm. Like, it is very much like, no, the artist intended it to be written this way.
Yeah.
And I can't remember if we actually talked about this in something recorded or not, but we were talking about covers. Mm. Where it's like, you know, you get those ones that just make it their own, or respecting the piece, or just doing the piece, but they're the singer instead of the original. So they've, a lot of these types of competitions, especially at this stage, don't want the flair. They want the technical.
I mean, there's an argument for both. It's a whole lot. It's a whole lot easier to judge if everyone's trying to play the exact same thing.
Yes.
Like, oh, he's a bit slow, and oh, he missed that note.
Yeah. I think so. From like a middle school competition standpoint, I think of it like a bass writing competition or something. It's the, do you know the rules well enough? Because you're not likely at the point where you're ready to break them. So I think that is part of it. Though, again, I know the classics, there's definitely a school of thought out there that says, no, Beethoven wrote it this way and he meant it. How dare you question the great?
Man, I don't know anything about this.
I figured you didn't, and that's why I wanted to mention it.
my middle school musical instrument, aside from the recorder, was one of them washtub basses with the one string. I played the doom 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 in, I think it was Lollipop.
Yeah, I definitely have a bit more of a musical background. I was in all of the choirs and all of the bands. Concert bands.
Just because I've made a few hip hop beats recently doesn't mean I know anything about music. I just really like listening to it.
Hey, you did our awesome opening theme song. yeah, no, that's kind of what I wanted to I wanted to point that out.
I was disappointed in Kusei's response to Kerari's, like, did you like my performance?
Mm.
Like, his answer was okay. Because he quite obviously did.
Mm-hmm.
But was unable to show it. He expressed it weirdly. Maybe there was a poetry about it in Japanese that didn't translate into the subtitles. Like, I could see that there was something there. The whole, like, look, these little girls went and bought you flowers and then came back that they liked your performance so much. It's that kind of performance.
So, I do think there, I could see why you think there's a little bit of a loss in translation aspect there.
Mm.
What I think it was, I think this was him, because again, it's clear he comes from that technical background.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like the type that exactly on the beat. I mean, they called him the human metronome.
Yeah.
So I think it's very similar to what he said to Sabaki, but he was a bit more straightforward there, where it's like, yeah, she's not going to get it. Whereas he didn't want to say that to her because he liked the performance.
Mm.
So this was a good way for him to express that. And I could see, as someone in the immersed in that same type of world, would understand the meaning behind that.
Well, I was wondering if it was him holding on to the last vestiges, the last tendrils of that part of himself that is wrapped around the technical world. Because he's not ready to give that up, even though it hurts him and it damages him. So he was unable to admit or even say, yes, I liked it.
Could be. It's... I think it's ambiguous in the right way in that regard.
Yeah, I think like so.
It could be that. I think... Yeah, I definitely think there's aspects of that, because he definitely was clearly very into it. It's also, like, part of that ambiguity can come from the fact that I'm not sure if he might not have known how to respond, not in a kindness way, but like just in a more from being a peer.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because as a peer, you'd say it's like, yes, this isn't going to get you through. And as a friend, you want to say, holy crap, that was amazing. Mm-hmm. And it can sound very out of place to say, that was amazing, and you're not going to pass.
Yeah, sure.
Patronizing, I think, would be.
Yeah,
I think almost be how that comes across.
I agree.
Yeah. I do like how, they did that same kind of nervousness with her when she was asking his opinion. Made sure, like, focused on her hand, doing that little quiver that they did with Jose when he first entered the place.
Yeah, and that makes me wonder. Obviously, you can't answer this for me. It makes me wonder if that's because she looks up to him because he's that celebrity figure, or because she thinks of him or cares for him in a certain way that would make him nervous. Or is it because just a talented peer who she hasn't quite figured out yet? It'll be interesting. Like, obviously that's the relationship that they're trying to get you to theorize about. Right. In the first three episodes, they want you to care about. At least until there's Tsubaki drama.
There's a couple other things around those scenes, but I'm not really going to say anything if you don't point it out other than that.
No, that's fine.
So
I was actually a little absorbed in episode 2. So I didn't really jot anything down. So it kind of grabbed me, took me along for the ride, which is both a good thing from an entertainment standpoint and an emergent standpoint, but it's terrible for an objective viewership standpoint. So good work, you're a lion, April.
Yeah, and it doesn't surprise me you're not bringing up what I'm seeing, but as I said, I can't really go into it because I just, yeah.
Yeah, don't worry about it. So I think at the end of the episode, I believe it was at the end of the episode, Kari was waiting for Watari.
Yes.
And then Kusei shows up. And this is when our first lie is told. Dun, dun, dun. Which, given the whole conversation, and I think that was in episode 2, the conversation regarding Kari and the whole, like, yeah, I know you like her.
Yeah.
But it's not about how she feels or how I feel. It's about what you're feeling right now, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it was pretty much right before this scene.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was just... It was a super weird interaction for, like, Kusei to just, like, just straight up make up a bunch of stuff about what Tari was doing. Like, he could have white lied it or just said, I don't know what he's doing. I haven't seen him around.
So there's a couple of things that I like with this. I don't think he's exactly practiced at that. For one, I think he was giving a proper white lie. And she decided to follow up on it.
Okay.
Right. It's like, yeah, no, practice is running late. He does the whole sports ball thing.
Did he get any net points?
So you have the sports ball thing. So it works. It's like, oh, maybe I'll go watch practice. Like, and then he's just, oh, I messed up. whereas I think it would be harder to explain. It's like, yeah, no, I don't know where what is obviously one of my best friends. I have no idea what he's up to. You know, they're probably in the same class. So I think that was that. I also like that Kosei basically returned Otari's loyalty. I like, because it's clear that she is sparking something in him.
Yeah.
And he knows this. And Otari knows this.
And Kari notices this.
Yeah.
And Tsubaki knows this.
Yeah. To the point of what the exact spark is, you know, I don't think they necessarily all see the same spark there. But Iso could have easily just crapped on her day.
Yeah.
And just ruined that. But he didn't, because, you know, bros.
Maybe it's like that whole, like, one-sided knowledge thing, but I get this feeling like, how could she not know?
I don't disagree.
So, like, it wouldn't surprise me if she came back in the future and was like, yeah, I totally knew the whole time. And you were totally covering for him. I get it.
Yeah. But I mean, it's probably one-sided knowledge. Because he's not going to confirm or deny that.
But that leads us into our Caramel Waffles with Nuts date.
Mm-hmm.
Episode 3.
Yeah.
Honestly, it didn't look all that interesting at all, the food.
That's because it was a cartoon.
Sometimes cartoon food looks good. But in this case, it just kind of looked like a mess. Mess on a plate. I don't know. She liked it. That's all that matters to me.
I mean, it sounds tasty.
It depends what kind of nuts.
Hey. These nuts.
I'll edit that out.
I will. Maybe.
Do it. Fix it in post. I really What I liked about this date is her repeatedly calling him friend A.
Yes.
Totally, like, this gives me a feeling that she has a lot of, like, insider information about Kosei. Mm. I think she has an inclination as to how he feels about her, or at least a suspicion. I think she definitely knew he was pretty much only there to make it feel less awkward at the time.
Mm.
I think some things later on in the episode were revealed to her, right?
Mm.
Yeah, it's one of the things I'm super curious to know about right now is exactly what does Karai know?
Okay.
Yeah. It'll be fun to see if there's any revelations in that aspect, or if it's just like I'm just overthinking it, which is entirely possible. But that definitely brings me to probably one of my favorite scenes in the three episodes. The just a little like cafe piano scene.
Mm.
Not so much like the sad piano, happy piano thing. I was kind of whatever about that. But kind of like the 0 to 60, like, don't disappoint children, to like doing some very easy Twinkle Twinkle Little Star.
Yeah.
Into like the super complex, maybe even improvisation. Jesus Christ.
This isn't getting edited out.
No, I swore you got to.
Nah, it's well past the 30 seconds that YouTube really cares about.
Improvisational.
There you go.
I forgot the rest of my sentence while I was going through that stroke. Yeah, when he was doing the improvisational piece, or part of it there. Obviously, he was working within the chords and playing notes based on the other notes that were in it.
Yeah.
And just like riffing out, and then all of a sudden everybody around is amazed. And this is kind of when you start seeing him like get some more of that color back, right?
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden when he has his little episode, feels like it was like all taken away again.
Mm-hmm.
It just stands there in silence. There's something about the scene that I just really liked and I thought was quite powerful. And it was
sure.
Well, it's, there's a lot of aspects to it. So you have the innocence of the children, and then you compare it to the innocence-less-ness of his childhood. In the way that he was trained, to him regaining a piece of himself and beginning to see these colors, and then kind of snapping back to how he was and like encountering that brick wall again.
Mm-hmm.
There was just so much that was happening at the same time, and I think it's definitely a scene that most people might overlook for that. I think it's more powerful than most people think.
No. There is only one part of what you said that I disagree with. and that is, I think the conversation about the Had and Sappy piano was just as important to the rest of that scene.
I didn't say it's important. I said I didn't really care about it.
So I think it was a very clear showing of where the two of them are coming from.
Mm-hmm.
So he's going, it's like, no, it's sad because, again, as you said, that rigidness.
Mm-hmm.
Right? This is a tool. You treat your tools right. Whereas she's like, no, this is a passion. And that means it's the way, just like she performs full of life. So it's a happy piano. The piano is full of life.
Mm-hmm. Whereas he only sees the potential damaging effects of the water.
Yes. Yep. Which is also echoed in what he's talking about when we explore a bit of that wall.
Mm-hmm.
A bit more. Right? That is how he ends up describing it. Like he's drowning. So he is seeing water damage at a piano in that poetic sense again. I absolutely love how he couldn't. It goes back to him miming and the light that showed in episode 2.
Mm-hmm.
He's terrified of the piano. Now we're given fairly good idea why at this point, through the flashbacks, everything. And even, well, yeah, he can make himself do Twinkle Twinkle Little Star, much like he could make himself play the transposition that he was doing of the pop song.
Mm.
Right. So it's not that he can't play, but he also can't help himself from adding those flourishes. And yeah, just hitting that mental block, just hitting like a ton of bricks. Like it's just so, I agree, it's very impactful. And you're right, I could see a lot of people not giving this scene the full weight that is clearly setting up for. Like, clear enough that even Drew's like, this means something.
It means a thing. I don't know yet what it means. It means a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, just like, there's definitely something striking about it from like beginning to end. It makes me, like, on the emotional level, it makes me wonder how they're going to end up playing with the emotions throughout the rest of the series.
Mm.
Especially as, like, it transitioned to the bus ride part.
Mm-hmm.
It was so weird. Like, it was a weird series of scenes. I can't remember the correct order. Was the bus ride at the end of episode 2?
No.
It was in episode 3?
Yeah.
Because there was a lot packed into episode 3. Yes. Just Tsubaki straight up saying, it's like, I don't care if he starts playing piano again. I just want him to quit playing on his own terms.
Right.
Like, he needs to get over this thing that's inside of him. And it shows that deep care that she has for him.
Yeah.
So it was quite striking emotionally there. And I think that revealed a lot to Kaori about Kusei. And then, of course, getting off at the hospital stop makes you go, but what? I can't watch the next episode. That's for next week. Darn it.
Yep, that is definitely a thing. She does, in fact. I like the again, that quitting on your own terms, because again, you can see that it's a block. It's not that he doesn't know if he wants to play or not. I think how she's reading.
Yeah, and the way she's expressing it is that it's obviously affecting him in other facets of his life.
Yeah. In fact, that's what you said is pretty much exactly how I noted it. So.
Good job, Drew. was the whole like chasing
yes
Kusei down after that scene?
Yes.
Because I think that more than anything just like hyper reinforced to Carrie that like I need this guy to be my accompaniment. Like, I think she's full on board with the rehabilitate Kusei train, and I suspect, finger in the air, I suspect, much like my image in this video, that it's because there's something about her that needs to be rehabilitated. And I think that she thinks she'll be able to find it through interacting with Kusei. Because she's definitely not going to get it from Watari. Well, she might get something, but probably just be a smooch or two. It's definitely not going to be emotional support.
I'm curious about your choice of words there.
A smooch? That's when two people place their lips against each other and they make, like, puckered.
Oh, thanks for clarifying that. Sorry, so I'm, to clarify, despite what people think,
it looks like this.
It's been a long time, but I haven't.
Since you've had a smooch, yes.
It may have been a long day, but I vaguely recall.
Okay. I'll be serious. Sorry.
No, you won't.
that's my lie in me.
We've talked about this with characters in the past about, again, we talked about in Carol and Tuesday about how they got together because they clearly kind of completed each other in some way.
Mm-hmm.
So I get, if I'm understanding what you're saying correctly, you're expecting a similar type relationship here.
Yes, I think Kari needs structure and support, and I think Kusei needs life and wildness isn't the correct term, but I think you get what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. That energetic
vivacity. Yeah, I was going to say vivaciousness, but vivacity is the correct tense.
It's one of them. Yeah. why did you use the term rehabilitated?
Because I think there's something broken with both of them.
Okay.
And I think much like a damaged muscle, you need to work it and start gentle and build up the strength and work through it. Sometimes you have to work through the pain, right?
Yeah.
Like, literally use the word rehabilitated intentionally. For...
It felt intentional. I just wanted clarification around it. It's not the term that I would actually expect you to use.
So you pucker your lips like this, right? And the other person does the same. And then you put them together and you make it sound like, mwah.
I was going to do the ASMR thing just to mess with
you. You do that and I'm canceling us on Twitter.
Oh no. Please don't stop.
Yeah, I think we'll find a little something with everyone, but I think that, at least as it's portrayed in the first three episodes, the biggest changes we're going to find with, obviously, Kusei and Kari.
Mm. They're clearly the leads.
Yeah, and Watari is going to remain relatively stable. Maybe in the end he'll become a one-woman guy. Or maybe it'd be like, oh, I've actually just been playing all these ladies because I'm actually into dudes, which would be fine. Because I wasn't interested in them in the first place. I was just searching for something and they didn't give it to me. I'd be cool with that. My thing is Tsubaki. I understand her motivations. In fact, she has the most clear motivations of the series so far. But I don't know where she's going.
Mm.
I don't even have a theory. So she's a mystery to me in that aspect. Which makes her makes her even more interesting.
And then you're going to find out and just lose all interest altogether. Mystery's gone. No. No, she's definitely the in our four-man band, she's definitely the rock right now.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. On your bed, she's definitely the waifu pillow. Every time I hear that word now, all I hear is Ashley saying the Father, the Son, and the Holy Waifu on the... Was it the E.T. or the Roger Rabbit podcast?
Oh, probably yes. I think that fits a lot more in Roger Rabbit than it does in E.T., but E.T. went off the rails, so... I can neither confirm nor deny which one it was.
I think, sir, you'll find that E.T. was perfectly on the rails. You'll find Coke. That we did. Touché, touché. Anyways, I would say... More than Carol and Tuesday season 2, more than Firefly, because I'd already seen it, more than, was it Evno Jenkin, I'm feeling that need to watch the next episodes, like, It's a good feeling because I haven't felt that way about any of the Second Wall series that we've done since the season one, the only actual season of Carol and Tuesday.
It's true. One day they'll make us a second season and it'll star Angela.
And they'll cut out all the BS.
That is... I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, there is a little something for everyone, I think. Well, that's not a true statement. It's not just a romance thing, right? And it's not just a slice of life thing. Like, there is actual progression going on. We haven't yet hit a conflict, but there is a good story. There will eventually be some type of romance, but I think I am hopeful until the end, or until I get disappointed. And then I have to disavow an entire season of a show.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Release it.
That's it. That's all I got.
All right. Well, I have some things noted, but I am pointing them out.
Well, good on you, sir. Good on you. Okay, well,
Fiend. All right, Fiend.